Travel author, expert, and entrepreneur Rick Steves wants Americans to travel past Orlando and broaden their views. This week, Techonomics host Jason Middleton chats with Rick Steves about his new book, and that conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening, as always. Maybe you've noticed it too, but things are a little tense, politically speaking at least. In this segment, we speak with travel expert, author, podcaster, YouTuber, and dare say American icon, Rick Steves. Rick has a new edition of his book, Travel as a Political Act, How to Leave Your Baggage Behind. And doesn't that subtitle sound appealing?
He was right when he said travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. That's pretty beautiful words on the part of Mark Twain. I like two other quotes. Muhammad said, "Don't tell me how educated you are, tell me how much you've traveled." And Thomas Jefferson said, "Travel makes a person wiser if less happy."
Tribal thinking, otherness, is a destructive force, both socially and economically. The travel industry is flourishing in Europe, but for the United States, not so much. These data from the U.S. Travel Association, a trade group, America's share of global travel fell from 13.6% to 11.9% between 2015 and 2017. The United States was one of only two destinations in the top dozen global markets to see a decline in long-haul inbound travel since 2015. Here's our discussion on the state of travel today.
Rick Steves, and I write travel books.
The new edition is Travel as a Political Act, How to Leave Your Baggage Behind. I guess my macro question to start with, Rick, would be why the new edition of this book now?
Oh, I mean, think of it. There's Brexit, there's refugees, there's Erdogan, there's Trump. We got all this nativism and populism and ongoing concerns about terrorism and climate change. There's so much happening since I've written the first and second editions of this book. My publisher said, "We're going to reprint." I said, "Don't reprint. I want to completely update it." So this third edition is really talking about what's going on in our world today for travelers and what we can learn and the value of getting out of our comfort zone and looking at our country from a distance. I'm just so excited to have the new edition of Travel as a Political Act out to help inspire Americans to go beyond Orlando.
Would you say that Mark Twain was right when he said that travel is fatal to prejudice and bigotry?
I would say he was right when he said travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. That's pretty beautiful words on the part of Mark Twain. I like two other quotes. Muhammad said, "Don't tell me how educated you are, tell me how much you've traveled." And Thomas Jefferson said, "Travel makes a person wiser if less happy." And these are thought-provoking comments from very thoughtful and wise and well-traveled people. Mm-hmm. And I just love the opportunity to learn more about the other 96% of humanity and traveling out of my comfort zone, challenging truths I was raised thinking are self-evident and God-given, and then coming home with what I think is the most beautiful souvenir, a broader perspective, and, you know, just a mindset where I'm more inclined to build bridges and less inclined to build walls.
So I'm going to dive into one story that stood out for me, and I think it was chapter 6, and that had to do with your father and going to Istanbul. Can we talk a little bit about that and how that came about?
We do tours all over Europe, and the most faraway tour we do is Turkey and so on. And I like to help Americans be exposed to secular, Western-looking Islamic nation and a Muslim nation, and to just kind of humanize that whole amazing culture. My dad was nervous about Islam, and I just thought any time I've got a loved one whose worldview is a little bit narrow, I want to take them to Turkey. I just love Turkey and just get to have the group meet a dervish, you know, and mm-hmm. explain to, you know, I just introduced my group to a dervish, and the dervish said, "You can watch me pray, but only if I can explain to you what I'm doing." And he would say, you know, I'm like you would call it a monk. The prophet I follow is Mevlana. It's kind of like the Saint Francis for Muslims, the prophet of love. It's easy to get your brain around him. And five times a day, I spin myself into a meditative trance, and I become a conduit of God's love, thinking about Mevlana's teaching. And I plant one foot in my home, in my family, in my hometown, and the other foot goes around celebrating the diversity on this planet. One hand goes up, accepting the love of our Maker, and the other hand goes down, showering God's love on this creation like a spout on a tea kettle. Mm-hmm. And I lose myself in that beautiful idea, and I endeavor to become a conduit of God's love. To take a group of Americans onto a rooftop at sunset in Turkey and watch a dervish whirl, and then to look at their faces and see the wonder sweep over their faces and to realize they're going to go home less frightened and a little broader in their viewpoint, that's the beauty of travel. And for me as a travel writer and a tour guide, it's something I just find very gratifying.
Do you find that Americans have a reticence when it comes to this kind of exploration, this kind of open-mindedness as compared to, say, continental Europeans?
Yes, I think Americans, the bigger your country is, not Americans, I think the bigger your country may be, the more ethnocentric you're inclined to be. So there's ethnocentric Chinese, Russians, Indians, Germans. You don't find ethnocentric Norwegians and Belgians and so on, because they know the world is a huge and diverse place. And I just love the idea that through travel, we can humanize the rest of the world. And a beautiful byproduct of that is it makes it tougher for their propaganda to demonize us. And when we come home, it makes it tougher for our propaganda to dehumanize them. And I just think that's a beautiful and important sort of byproduct of travel.
Just as a quick aside, are you seeing a trend with dual citizenship or Americans specifically looking for a European citizenship?
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of people that are thankful they have dual citizenship. A lot of people are kind of fatalistic about where they think America's heading. I'm American through and through. I can't imagine living anywhere else. I'm sort of disappointed I'm hugely disappointed in the electorate in our country right now because we're so fearful. And without a global viewpoint, you know, when you have a global viewpoint, you realize half the people on this planet are trying to live on $2 a day. There's a billion people trying to live on $1 a day. The average lot for women in life in much of the world is to abandon their children for half their waking hours and walk for water and firewood, and it gets a longer walk every year. Well, these are real issues, and a lot of Americans don't want to be troubled by that. Instead, we're already filthy rich, and we're pedal to the metal and very aggressive on poor countries in order for us to get richer. I just don't think it's a true American values. It's certainly not Christian values, and I've learned that even if you're motivated only by greed, you don't want to be filthy rich in a desperately poor world. It's just not a nice place to raise your kids. And you find that when you get to walk with families in desperately poor countries and realize the struggles that they've got. It's not a guilt trip. You know, my daughter gets braces. You know, I had $5,000 and money left over for a whitener so she could have straight and white teeth. That's a beautiful thing. But for the cost of two sets of braces, you could drill a well in a thirsty community, and all those moms could stay home every morning and take care of their kids. And instead of walking across the county for water, they'd walk across the square for water. Mm-hmm. And every time they pumped that water, by the way, they'd think, God bless America, if it came from us. And I just think that's a good example of soft power. And I think it's a good example of how even people who are only concerned about their economic and security concerns, it's a good investment. It's the right thing to do. And so there's opportunities. And the more we can humanize the planet, the better we'll be. But so many times when we don't travel, our view of the world can be warped, and then people can take advantage of us. And I'm very concerned about the fear that's racking our country right now. When I started traveling, people said bon voyage. And now nobody says bon voyage. They say have a safe trip. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where this came from, because it's safer to travel now than it ever has been. And when somebody tells me I have a safe trip, I'm inclined to say, well, you say have a safe stay at home, because where I'm going is statistically, if you believe in statistics, it is safer than where you're staying. It's just clear. When I leave the United States of America, it's safer for me than staying here statistically. And people still pray for me to have a safe trip. I just think it's kind of, I wish they would say bon voyage.
I had a historian on last week, and her two measures were, show me how big your middle class is and how many girls go to college, and I'll show you how healthy your culture is.
Well, there you go. And if you wonder why much of Europe is so satisfied and content, it's countries that have a big middle class. I like to work hard and make good money, and I do. And I think one of the worst things in our society is the fact that we're losing our middle class. We're always going to have wealthier people and poorer people. That's the nature of capitalism. But the mark of a health of a society is not how much it makes in total, but how equal the wealth is distributed.
Okay, my last quick question, I know you have to go, is about tech. This is ostensibly a tech show, so I'm going to ask you, do you carry any gadgets on your trips?
You know, a few years ago in my guidebooks, we decided it is standard equipment to have a smartphone. You need a smartphone and you need to know how to use it overseas, economically and so on. But I'm not enamored with apps that help me translate things as I go and so on. I'm using a Google Maps tool is really great. Crowdsourcing is good, but I think people over-rely on it. My job has morphed from somebody who generates content to somebody who curates content also, because there's so much content out there that some of it is good and some of it is not. But the fundamentals of travel are the same. The more people you meet, the better trip you're going to have.
Well, your book, Travel as a Political Act, is a great book. Rick Steves, thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you, and happy travels.
That was Rick Steves. Rick has a new edition of his book, Travel as a Political Act, How to Leave Your Baggage Behind. For a link to all of Rick's work, including his new book, check this week's show story at KGORadio.com. We include all of our sourcing in that story, by the way. Coming up after the break, Waymo and Uber reach a surprise settlement over trade secrets, sharp elbows, and self-driving technology.
And given the volume of the filing and the size of the legal teams and the firms that were involved, so, you know, but that's the cost of doing business and in Silicon Valley, and we see it over and over again.
That's next. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.